Welcome to another episode of the SaaS Podcast. I'm your host, Omar Khan, and this is the show where I interview proven founders and industry experts who share their stories, strategies, and insights to help you build, launch, and grow your SaaS business. In this episode, I talked to Todd Chambers, the director and founder of UpRaw Media, an Amsterdam-based agency that helps SaaS companies to grow and scale using paid media. In this episode, you'll learn the top six mistakes that SaaS companies make with pay-per-click campaigns and how you can avoid them. Whether you're running Google AdWords, Facebook advertising, or LinkedIn ads, you'll hear some useful advice from a PPC expert about how to be more effective with your PPC campaigns. You'll learn about the importance of understanding SaaS unit economics, why you need to track both online and offline conversions, how to take a full funnel approach to your PPC campaigns, the one key metric that SaaS companies often don't focus enough on, why you're probably underinvesting in your conversion rate optimization, and the importance of aligning sales and marketing to make your PPC campaigns effective. So I hope you enjoy it. Is your team struggling with spreadsheets that can't keep up with your workflows? It's time to switch to JotForm Tables. JotForm Tables is an all-in-one workspace that lets you collect, organize, and manage data seamlessly. Not only can you create online forms to gather data directly in JotForm Tables, but it also serves as a powerful tool to manage and analyze the data collected from your existing JotForm forms. You can also import spreadsheets or enter information manually, and all your data is stored securely in one place. JotForm Tables makes collaboration a breeze. You can share your tables with a single click and work with your team in real time. Say goodbye to version control issues and hello to efficient teamwork. Get started with JotForm Tables for free today at sasclub.io/jotform. That's sasclub.io/jotform. Are you looking to sell your online business or buy one to start your entrepreneurial journey? Discover exciting opportunities with Bupos.com. Bupos is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses and the first to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers. At Bupos.com, you can explore their exclusive listings, browse listings from other marketplaces, or submit your own deal for approval. Bupos can offer pre-approved financing for recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding with no personal guarantees. And their experienced M&A advisory team supports you every step of the way. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/Bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to sell your business or find your next deal. Hey, are you struggling to grow your SaaS business? As a SaaS founder, you know that having the right tools is crucial for growing your SaaS business effectively. But with so many options, choosing the best ones for your needs can be overwhelming. That's where the SaaS Toolkit comes in. This handy guide covers the 12 essential types of tools you need to supercharge your growth. Inside, you'll find a detailed look at tools successful SaaS startups have used to scale to seven figures and beyond. It gives you specific examples and makes practical recommendations to help you choose the right tools for your SaaS business. Don't miss out. Visit thesaastoolkit.com to download your free copy and unlock faster growth for your SaaS business. That's thesaastoolkit.com. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for people who don't know anything about UpRaw Media, tell us, like, who are your ideal clients? How do you help them? And, you know, what's the big problem that you're trying to solve here?
Yeah, so our typical clients are SaaS companies looking to scale. And the problem we're trying to solve is to help them scale and grow using paid media, which requires quite a specific set of skills. And we also do conversion rate optimization. So we help them build experiments, hypotheses, and then we also do measurement. So we help them understand the impact of their paid media spend and how that translates into revenue.
So when you talk about PPC, where does most of that focus go? Is it on search ads? Is it, I mean, obviously Google is a big part of that, but we're talking more broadly, right? There's a whole bunch of different places that you can be spending your PPC budget these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And we typically work in a B2B environment, in SaaS B2B, lead gen. So the majority, I would say more than 50% goes to Google, not just search. That would be GDN, display, remarketing, YouTube video campaigns, maybe Gmail ads, a small amount on Bing for US clients, and then LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and then some other niche platforms like Quora and soon to be TikTok.
Okay, so just tell us a little bit about yourself. You're here as the PPC expert who's helping SaaS companies. So just tell us about you and sort of how you ended up doing what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. I've been basically working in PPC for over 10 years. Used to work in central London, running agencies there. And we're actually currently based in Amsterdam. We have a small team here of eight people. And around 3 years ago, I decided just to focus purely on SaaS. In my experience in PPC, SaaS companies tend to make really good working partners because they're technically proficient. Usually the whole business is based on online. So there's kind of, there's a good synergy there with SaaS businesses. So, yeah.
Okay, great. So today we're going to talk about six mistakes that you've seen SaaS companies make with PPC. So without further ado, why don't we start digging into that? So what is mistake number one?
Yeah, okay. So all the mistakes I've seen. So I think the first thing to understand about a SaaS business is that the kind of the unit economics are different to maybe a normal traditional type business. So in an ideal world, you'll be optimizing towards LTV. You'll understand what your customer lifetime value is. And then you're basically saying how aggressive or how profitable do we want to be? So what percentage of that lifetime value will we be willing to give up to gain that customer, the customer acquisition cost, CAC, which I'm sure your listeners will understand. And then how many conversions will it take us to get that customer acquisition? So in my experience in dealing with SaaS companies that spend hundreds of thousands or whether they spend $5,000 or $10,000, 95% of the time, people don't take the time to understand the unit economics. So if you think about it, if you're optimizing towards LTV, it might be 18 to 24 months before you actually realize that LTV. But if you're giving up, say, I think traditionally in SaaS, it's said roughly 33% or one third is of your LTV should be given towards CAC. But if you're giving that 33% up in month one and it takes you 2 years to realize it, you can get into this kind of negative cash flow trough. So taking the time to really understand that, I see most SaaS companies don't do.
So let's kind of just give a really simple example. So let's say we have a SaaS company where the lifetime value is $1,000, right? Just an easy number to work with. And when we think about CAC or the customer acquisition cost, if we go with the third guideline, it could be, well, we are willing to spend, you know, $333 to acquire that customer through PPC. Mm-hmm. But that spend goes in month one, but we might not realize the full, you know, value of that customer for the 24 months. So how is that going to kind of balance out? And then I think the other part you just talked about was the conversion. So I guess this is about how many leads or clicks I guess I need to generate in order to be able to get that one sale. Is that what you mean by that?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, indeed. So just reverse engineering each piece of the puzzle. How many conversions do we need to get to realize that customer acquisition cost?
So just in terms of best practice, what is like the right way to sort of do this?
Yeah, so it can be difficult because obviously if you're a startup, you may have just launched or you're 3 or 4 months in and you're running a SaaS business and you don't really understand your LTV because it could well be that people stay on board for 24 months or maybe you haven't even got the measurement in place. So that's a difficult one to answer. I mean, the best thing you can do is make good assumptions. And even by making predictions and assumptions, it's a much better starting point than just kind of putting your finger in the air and hoping for the best. But I would say, if you have funding and you're able to, you know, spend money to kind of accumulate over the long run, although the cash flow trough can be deeper, at the end of it, you'll come out with much more profit. Whereas if you're maybe don't have so much cash, it's maybe better to have a kind of much quicker buyback period to get your customer acquisition costs. So maybe just a super simple example. So maybe if your customer acquisition cost is $75 and your SaaS subscription is $25, then it's going to take you 3 months to gain back the customer acquisition cost. So basically, if you don't have much money, you need a shorter time period to regain the CAC.
Got it. Okay. And in terms of conversion, what is the objective there? Is just to sort of figure out how much you can potentially bid on an ad?
Yeah, so there's a ton of nuance in this, because obviously the conversion rate from each channel will be different. So if we just take search is usually the typical place to start. So making sure you have all the measurement in place with the CRM and following through the original click, it's called a Google Click ID, making sure that's sent in with the form, which kind of leads nicely onto the next point, which is not tracking offline conversion. So yeah, let's go there. So many people, what they'll do is they'll just track conversions. And a typical thing we hear is that they want better, they want quality leads. Well, the only way you can really do that is by connecting offline with online. So making sure you have the G-Cleared, for example, in Google, the click ID, making sure that's sent through with the form, and making sure that is sent through with each phase of the sales process. So when they become an MQL and a SAL and closed one, that the click ID is associated with that, and then you can measure more effectively, and then you can, retrospectively go back and make sure that your original assumptions are correct. So not tracking offline is a big mistake we also see.
Okay, let's kind of just clarify this as well. So if you have a SaaS business where it's pretty much self-serve, people come to the website, they can sign up for a trial, they can put in their credit card information, and they can start paying, that's a lot clearer, because you can measure basically end to end from the point where I got a click from, let's say, LinkedIn through to that person becoming a trial, or whatever my model is for getting those people in or activating them, through to this is now how much they're paying, and they're a customer. So that's I guess that part is easier to track. The online offline piece challenge becomes when you're a business that there's some level of sales involved. And so the online component is just generating the lead for you. Then there's a whole bunch of, like you said, is this, an MQL, marketing qualified lead, handing off to sales, conversations, demos, more demos, whatever it takes until you get to a point where you can close that sale.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And often in a B2B and like enterprise level SaaS, you see much longer sales cycles. So really to go one step further, the end game is that you're not optimizing in your ad account towards a conversion. You're optimizing towards another offline event, which is closer to the sale. So this is where it becomes tricky, because you need, so for example, if we say we're not going to track conversions, we want to optimize towards MQLs. So in an ideal world, you'd have the G-Cleared pass through. You then maybe say 20% of conversions become... Sorry.
Todd, just explain the G-Cleared for people who don't know what that is.
Sure. So every time you click on a Google ad, there's a UTM parameter. There's a unique ID in the URL. And then it's basically you capture that ID in the cookie. And then when someone submits the form on HubSpot or whatever, an unbounce, it captures that click ID, which leads nicely onto my next point. What you ideally want to do is then when that person becomes an MQL, that original click ID is associated in the CRM, and then you can push that back into Google Ads, for example, systematically. So you can then start optimizing in the account based on MQLs, or even if you have enough data, you could even go further in the maybe a SAL, or as far as you can go where there's enough volume. So the algorithm's actually learning based on further down the funnel. That's kind of the best possible solution.
Right. And the reason that's important is because it really gives you a much better understanding or visibility of how you're actually converting and how effective your PPC campaigns are. Because in that kind of environment where you have some offline component or sales, and maybe there's a long sales cycle, it's not uncommon that 6 or 9 months down the road, you close a sale and you don't know where that lead came from.
Indeed. There's only one slight nuance in that the click ID in the case of Google, that G-Cleared, it has a 90-day shelf life. So once the sales cycle goes over 90 days, you can't re-import back into Google Ads. So again, that's another nuance you need to consider if you have super long sales cycles.
Okay, so let's talk about the next mistake.
Yeah, okay. Mistake number three, so not taking a full funnel approach to PPC. So in my experience, dealing with lots of SaaS companies, and particularly ones that have funding, they have lots of money and they have kind of really aggressive growth targets and investors, you know, they need to grow, they need to grow fast. And they think they can kind of throw money at the problem. And typically what happens is they run search campaigns, lower funnel search, you know, people that are actively looking for a solution maybe, and they throw as much money as possible and they get into this kind of negative Google quality score problem where Google kind of realizes you're pushing really, really hard. They lower your quality score and it kind of exponentially increases the cost with very little kind of extra volume in terms of growth.
Just explain that before you get on, Todd. Like if I'm spending more money on an ad on, let's say, Google, a search ad, why would Google reduce my quality score unless my ad is crap, right? What other reasons would there be for reducing that quality score?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's obviously only a finite number of people actually making those searches. So that's one thing. And the reason the quality score tends to happen is people think they can throw money at it and they can just run kind of lower funnel, direct response type landing pages to everybody. So they just say like, sign up to my free thing. It's like, it's free to sign up. Just very limited information, just sign up. But obviously what Google likes is, you know, good content. They like the user to be able to, they don't want the users to bounce. So yeah, it's typically because they have very low information, direct response landing pages kind of to everybody. And Google doesn't really like that because it's not a good user experience. They hit you with low quality score and yeah.
Okay. And I guess the other part of that is that if you are, let's say your reach is, again, let's say 5,000 people every month are searching for a keyword that you're targeting and you get super aggressive with that ad.
Yeah.
In terms of spending more, you could be in a situation where those 5,000 people are seeing your ad over and over and over again. And because you're sort of trying to get to the final piece in terms of sign up for my product without maybe thinking about what I can do earlier to sort of, you know, warm up this lead, you don't get enough clicks on the ad. And then so Google looks at that and says, okay, you've got an ad. Not enough people seem to be clicking on it. That's another reason that the quality score is going to go down and we'll probably prioritize somebody else who might do a better job.
Well, maybe not with search, because with search, they typically make a search or maybe they then make a different search. So it's not really a case of with search ads, you see the same ads over and over again. Definitely with display where you get remarketing and you get the same ad over and over again, that drives you crazy. I have that. That can kind of have a negative effect. But I think the solution to the problem is that you need to take a full funnel approach. So think more about how can you provide more upper funnel, how can you provide value to these people and kind of bring them along the journey, maybe bring them into an email automation. Then you can maybe do remarketing and you can give them even more valuable content. It's more about, it's more of a branding exercise when you kind of go upper funnel to bring people down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're looking at a slide here, which is a little awkward if you're on, you know, just listening to the podcast, but I'll kind of just try and explain to people. So in terms of the funnel, we're saying, okay, well, at the top, it's really about where you're getting all of these different leads coming through. It could be from, you know, podcasts, blogs, it could be on LinkedIn, it could be ads, whatever. And then people go through this process where there's sort of awareness, consideration, conversion. I think anybody who's done any kind of sort of marketing probably has a sense of that. And you know, there may be different ways you can describe a funnel, but effectively you're moving somebody who doesn't know anything, maybe doesn't even understand they have a problem, through to making a sale. And so sort of the first, if you sort of start at the bottom, you're sort of saying, okay, I'm going to focus on the people who are most aware. They know they have a problem. They're looking for a solution. They know about my product and I'm going to put it in front of them and they're going to buy it. And that kind of works, but that's probably a really small percentage of the total market of potential, you know, leads that are out there. And so if you move higher up the funnel, well, there are people who, you know, maybe they're looking for a solution, but they haven't figured out what the right product is. Or if we go even further up, maybe there's people who don't even realize they have a problem. And so you'd be much better off, rather than pushing your solution, to try and use content to maybe educate them more about the problem, right? That's
Absolutely correct. Yeah, perfect. And there's a slightly sophisticated way, which the next point is how you can, for example, with so different types of content for different people in the funnel, of course, and you kind of build that credibility. But the next point is that you can use, for example, Facebook, these kind of sequencing. So you can say, I'm going to use video for people top of funnel. So a cold audience, they maybe don't even know they have a problem yet, and I need to educate them on the problem, or they don't know a solution exists. You can run the video ads on that audience and say, for example, if they watch 80% of the video, then they go into a separate audience, which then gets, you know, more middle funnel ads. And if they engage in some way, then they get the more lower funnel, which could be like book a demo or download pricing. So having a kind of systematic way that you can bring people down the funnel in the ad platforms works really well.
Are you an entrepreneur looking to buy a profitable online business or a founder ready to sell? Bupos is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses. With their exclusive listings, as well as listings from other marketplaces and the option to submit your own deal for approval, Bupos has you covered. Plus, they're the first to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers of recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding without personal guarantees. And their experienced M&A advisory team supports you every step of the way. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/Bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to start your entrepreneurial journey or sell your business at the right valuation with Bupos.com.
Yeah. And so I think for me, the big takeaway here is think about where your potential customers are, what stage they're at, and focus on the right type of content, ads, whatever the solution is, to sort of serve the need that they sort of currently have, and then to move them through to the next stage.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. So mistake number four.
Yes. So not focusing on activation of users. So spending a lot of money to generate free trials. And then once they actually get them on board, they kind of overlook the obvious things. Like, what actually happens when someone's taking a free trial? Are we actively showing them how to use the tool with videos, with tips? I think that's a potentially really, really big oversight. Another thing would be maybe with email sequences. So, you know, once someone does sign up, how can you further educate them with your automation and things of that nature?
Right. Yeah. And then the reason this is important is this is part of the whole conversion process. And we're going to talk about conversion in a little bit. But if you're not doing a good job activating those leads and trials, then it's kind of like that leaky bucket syndrome, right? You're doing a lot of work and spending a lot of money on ads, and you're getting people to sign up for a trial, and then they're just not converting. And it's like, well, it doesn't stop when they've sort of just clicked through to the ad. There's still obviously work to do. And I think most founders sort of know that, you know, onboarding activation is an important part of that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, so like maybe is this sort of an example of maybe that you've seen something that...
Yeah. So I think you can use really sophisticated tools now. Like Heap is a tool that I often hear about tools from people we work with. Heap is a really good tool, and you can basically create, you know, personalized experiences based on the engagement of people in the platform. So I'm not particularly an expert on activation, but I definitely see that, you know, people spend a lot of money and then they realize that people are actually getting into the tool, they're signing up, but then they're not activating and actually starting to pay. So I just think it's an overlooked area. And it, like you said, it's the leaky part of the bucket.
Yeah. Okay. So mistake number five.
Not investing enough in conversion rate optimization. I think, again, I see SaaS companies spending hundreds of thousands a month, that, you know, 100,000 per month on Google Ads, and then they'll allocate 1,000 in conversion rate optimization. So if you're spending all that money to get someone to your site and to your landing page, well, you've only really actually done a very, very small part of the job. Although it's a huge kind of budget allocation, really, it's only just started. You've written an ad, they've seen it, they've clicked. Well, you know, the whole user experience is a huge, huge part of that. And so I think this is overlooked. And having a systematic approach to experiments, maybe doing a lot of research on collecting both the quantitative and the qualitative research, I think will give you a good head start.
Yeah, I mean, I think conversion rate optimization, I think, is super important. I do agree with you. I've seen a lot of examples where there's a fair amount of money being spent on ads, and then you get through to the landing page and, you know, you're like, wow, it's not surprising, or I wouldn't be surprised if actually this isn't converting well at all. So obviously, but conversion rate optimization isn't just about the landing page. It's also about constantly testing every aspect. So, if we sort of think this through from a search ad perspective, it could be, am I targeting the right keywords, and am I testing different keywords that I should be sort of targeting? If it was running LinkedIn or Facebook ads, it's like, you know, the audience targeting, am I targeting the right people, and do I test different audiences and see what's going on there? Then sort of the next step is the ad, right? So what type of ad do I have? What's the headline, the text? What's the creative? Is that actually doing the job? What other sort of tests am I doing alongside that? But I think it gets even more sort of sophisticated as you go in, right? Because it's very easy to set up an ad, but it's as much harder to figure out how to optimize it. And I think, you know, one example I can think of is seeing someone spending a lot of money on, I think it was LinkedIn, or I think it was Facebook ads. And then you sort of drill in and you realize that all the conversions were coming from mobile, and clients on the desktop weren't really converting, but there was a big chunk of the PPC spend going towards people on the desktop. So again, you can start to get more sophisticated and say, well, if no one on the desktop seeing this ad on the desktop is converting, maybe I just turn that off and focus on, you know, people on mobile devices as an example, right? And then, yeah, you've got the actual landing page and so on. So there's, I think the challenge though, probably with this is, it just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, I think it is. I think that's probably why people put it off. And everything you just said is totally correct. I mean, conversion rate optimization is all encompassing. Of course, and in PPC, I think typically people do that quite well. They test the hell out of the audiences. They test the ads, the campaign objectives, and all that stuff. And they kind of work in silo, and then they overlook the whole user journey. And the landing page to me and the user journey just doesn't get enough resources allocated. So you don't have to go crazy on this. I mean, even just, you know, personalizing landing pages with, keyword level, or, you know, bucketing your keywords into different types of intent, and then just changing a headline or a value proposition. So just a certain level of personalization is much more than what I see most companies do.
Yeah. Do you sort of agree with sort of doing conversion rate optimization, but sort of starting fairly simply and then kind of, you know, getting more sophisticated? Like, I don't think what you're saying here is like, hey, if you sort of start whatever type of PPC campaign tomorrow, make sure that you have 10 different ads from day one, that you have, you know, 20 different variations of landing pages, etc. You might get there, but you could probably start simpler by saying, okay, at least I'm going to test two different ads.
Yeah, indeed. And the size of the account will dictate how quickly you can get to statistical significance, because if you're spending hundreds of thousands, then you definitely should be investing more in landing page optimization. If you're spending just a few thousand, then it's going to take you much longer to get there. So, and you said about, you know, kind of, it also depends on the kind of the baseline of where you're at. So if your landing page is really, really poor and you can tell, then I would say maybe start with an overhaul, do some research, and I can share some more information on how I would approach that. And then, of course, yeah, make sure you're at least doing some experiments which fall in line with the amount of traffic you get. And VWO calculator has a really nice tool that helps you kind of gauge how long it would take to get to statistical significance based on your traffic volume.
Yeah. I remember seeing that a few years ago. So, and for people who aren't familiar, VWO is like Visual Website Optimizer. And so I think, as I recall, the idea is you just put in like a few things in terms of, you know, here's kind of like, you know, my potential reach, how many people will see this ad, et cetera, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then it'll tell you, I mean, that's a challenge, right? If you're starting out, you're in the early stages, you don't have a lot to spend on your PPC campaign. it might take you like a really long time to get to any sort of level of statistical significance.
Yeah.
Do you think that like that's still the right way for them to do that? Or maybe in the earlier stages where it's like, well, I just need to use, you know, a little bit of gut instincts and common sense to figure this out because I can't wait 14 months before, you know, I have enough traffic.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. I remember playing around with VW calculator and way back we had some clients and you know, we plugged in the numbers and you say, yeah, how many sessions do they get, visits per day, per week? And it would take 8 years to get to statistical significance, which is a little bit of a wake up call. So yeah, I think...
It only makes sense if you have enough traffic. Yes,
yeah, right? Indeed. But what you can do is, in the case of if you have a small amount of traffic, you can do kind of week over week comparisons or, you know, 2 week over 2 week comparisons. It's definitely not an exact science because seasonality and all sorts of other factors, but that's probably a good place to start.
Okay, let's talk about mistake number six.
Yeah, not aligning sales and marketing. So it sounds really, really obvious. Honestly, I've had clients where worst case scenarios where we're literally spending hundreds of thousands and then they'll say, oh, we just realized yesterday that the whole sales team was at an event. And it's like, okay, we spent like 7,000 euros yesterday on ads and now all these leads are sitting there, 100 leads sitting there or whatever, and no one's dealing with them. So I think that leveraging the experience of sales and kind of combining both sets of knowledge, in my experience, gives a lot of uplift. So you know, simple things like what information do we actually need in the form? Like at the moment, we're asking them for what country they're in or what industry. You know, do you need that? Do you actively use it? No. Okay, that's good insight. We can reduce the size of the form. Oh, we seem to be getting a lot of leads in Egypt and we don't really service leads in Egypt or whatever it is. So just speaking to people on the ground that are actually dealing with the leads and the kind of the fruits of your labor, connecting those two teams will provide a lot of insight.
Yeah. The form example, I guess, is sort of also connects back to conversion rate optimization. Like, you know, I guess the more questions you ask, the lower your conversion rate probably is going to be. So what's the minimal information that you need in order to be able to sort of move forward with the lead?
That's I guess kind of a simplistic example. Another example would be going back to conversion optimization. When you're thinking about building a landing page, so the first thing is you need a really, really strong value proposition, and the less known you are in the market, the less brand equity you have, the more strong that needs to be. The other major thing I would think about is how can you reinforce motivations, how can you address barriers before they become a barrier, and how can you answer important questions? And the people that typically know this are the sales team, because they're all customer success, or even speak to your customers, of course. But by aligning those two teams and you know, getting that feedback, it will help improve performance overall.
So are you saying, like, if hey, you talk to salespeople and they say every time we get new leads, we often hear some sort of objection that the product is too expensive? Then, okay, well, so you're saying, well, what can you do from a marketing perspective to address that before they even start talking to salespeople? So for example, it might be, can we use some sort of price anchoring, like in the message? So when they get to the landing page, we can, even though we might not go specifically into the cost of our product, maybe we can anchor that by telling them how expensive it would be if they were trying to do this some other way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very good point. I think pricing is another big one as well. And you see that with lots of SaaS companies. They probably, the number one question most people have is, how much is this thing going to cost? And it amazes me how often people use smoke and mirrors and they try and, you know, get people into, you know, just give us your email. They don't tell you about pricing, instant access. And then the second you give the email, then they ask for more information, and which is kind of clever in a way, because there's like, once humans, we like to finish things. So then people finish, and then they speak to sales and they do this dance, and ultimately it's completely out of the scope of their budget. So I just think being transparent and being clear is the best way to go.
Okay, great. So those are the six mistakes. One sort of question that I wanted to ask you is, when we started this conversation, we talked about there are lots of different ways that you could be spending your ad budget. And whether it's search, whether it's the Google Display Network, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, even more sort of niche kind of things. Well, like, well, I guess Quora isn't niche, but you know what I mean? Compared to Google, probably it is, right?
Yeah, sure. Indeed.
So what would be your advice for somebody who's saying, okay, I want to start spending this money. I think I need to do some pay-per-click advertising, but there's so many choices. How do I figure out what's right for me?
Yeah, so whether you're B2B or B2C will play a part in that. Obviously, B2B more towards LinkedIn, B2C, I would say Facebook. On the search side, it really depends if there are already people actively searching for a product just like yours. If you've created some kind of new SaaS product or tool that is completely revolutionary and people don't even know it exists, well, then search is probably not the best place to start because people aren't actively searching for it. And you maybe then want to start thinking about how to create content, how to bring value. I think video is an incredibly good way to do that because you can, you know, use it on all different platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. So I guess it depends, yeah, B2B, whether there's already search traffic and your budget as well. If you have a small budget, I think realistically the go-to starting place would be Google search.
Okay, great. So let's move on to our lightning round and wrap things up here.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you 7 quick fire questions. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
I think good now is better than perfect later.
What book would you recommend to our audience and why?
I would say I really liked Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. Really good. If you're trying to build a team, it's just how to kind of lead with vulnerability and use empathy. And really, I gained loads of value from that book.
What's one attribute or characteristic in your mind of a successful entrepreneur?
I would say persistence for me is the number one thing because you're going to come across so many challenges and roadblocks. Just the ability to keep getting up, learning from your mistakes and just going day after day.
What's your favorite personal productivity tool or habit?
I'd say getting exactly 7 hours and 45 minutes sleep for me, which is my average. If I sleep, I perform much better. So I use like an Aura tracking ring. And since then, I've been able to really understand where my how to improve my sleep and it just really helps my productivity.
Has it made that much difference? Like figuring out exactly 7 hours and 45 minutes?
Yeah, it's taken quite a lot of time, but you really realize how things like, for me, exercising late in the evening. I would often play football late in the evening, like 8 till 9 p.m. And it really, really kind of increases my heart rate. And I always have trouble sleeping. And also with things like even just a couple of glasses of wine late in the evening and certain types of food. So yeah, it's definitely shone a light on all my terrible habits.
What's a new or crazy business idea you'd love to pursue if you had the extra time?
I'm sure it's not crazy or new, but I'm pretty obsessed about coffee. So I think some kind of SaaS coffee type business would be great.
Ooh, what's an interesting or fun fact about you that most people don't know?
I would say I'm currently based in Amsterdam and I met my Dutch girlfriend on a beach in Sri Lanka and then ended up moving here.
And finally, what's one of your most important passions outside of your work?
I would say coffee. It's sad to say, but as we said before, I think I'm a coffee snob.
Should come to Seattle. We have some decent coffee here.
I would love to. I'll take that as an invitation and I'll send you the flight costs.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, great. So thanks for joining me, Todd. Thanks for sharing these lessons and mistakes and letting me pick your brain here. If people want to find out more about Uproar Media, they can go to uprawmedia.com.
Yeah.
And we'll include a link in the show notes to that. And if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would say via the site, or you can also connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I'm not hard to find. Todd Chambers, there's not many, I don't think.
Right. And then there's also a spreadsheet that you have that we're going to share with people.
Yeah, it's the SaaS unit economics. And basically you can plug in some numbers and it will tell you what your LTV is, what the CAC to LTV ratio is. And it also then projects month over month and graphs the cash flow trough we spoke about. And you can compare to different sets of metrics to see in the end which would be most profitable. So yeah, it's a nice tool.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. And thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And thanks for staying up late. I know it's probably, what is it?
It's 7:16 p.m. So it's no problem at all.
Not too bad. It's like, all right, cool. Thanks, Todd. And I wish you all the best. Cheers.
You too. Thanks, Emma. Speak soon.
Do you dream of owning a profitable online business, or are you looking to sell yours? Bupost.com is the number one platform for entrepreneurs and founders alike. With Bupost, you can discover exclusive listings, browse listings from other marketplaces, or submit your own deal for approval. As the first platform to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers, Bupost makes it easier than ever to acquire a recurring revenue business without personal guarantees. Their experienced M&A advisory team is dedicated to supporting you throughout the process, ensuring a smooth transaction. Don't miss out on this exciting opportunity. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to sell your business or find your next venture. Are you still wrestling with rigid spreadsheets that slow down your team? Jotform Tables is a solution you've been looking for. Jotform Tables combines the power of a spreadsheet with the flexibility of a database. You can collect your data through customizable online forms, and Jotform Tables automatically organizes and stores all the data submitted through your Jotform forms. You can also import and export files and collaborate with your team effortlessly. All changes are synced in real time, so everyone is always on the same page. But Jotform Tables is more than just a spreadsheet alternative. With conditional formatting, data visualization, and more than 250 integrations, it's a complete productivity platform for your team. You can even automate tasks and workflows to save time. Ready to centralize your data, boost your team's efficiency, and take your productivity to new heights? Sign up for free at sasclub.io/jotform. That's sasclub.io/jotform. Attention SaaS founders, are you determined to scale your B2B business to that coveted $1 million ARR milestone? I've got something that can help you get there faster. Introducing the SaaS Club newsletter, your weekly companion on the journey to SaaS success. Packed with proven strategies, practical insights, and exclusive interviews with B2B SaaS founders who've been where you are, this newsletter is your ticket to accelerated growth. Each week, in just 5 minutes, you'll gain access to a treasure trove of growth tactics, lessons learned, and insider tips to help you navigate the challenges of the early stages and scale your business to seven figures and beyond. So why wait? Become part of a 4,000 plus strong community of SaaS founders and entrepreneurs who are already harnessing these insights to drive their growth. Visit sasclub.io/newsletter and subscribe to the SaaS Club newsletter today. Gain the support and expertise you need to keep forging ahead on your SaaS journey.